Eagles Entertainment.
Anything that moves, I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time. Let's go.
Touchdown.
You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another day, and we're getting you ready for Eagles Bills as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 496. At the top of today's show, we've got Three and Out, where I chat with my buddy Ross Tucker. We go through the three things that are on the top of our minds getting ready for this matchup on Sunday afternoon between the Eagles and the Bills. A lot to cover getting into that one, and Ross and I dive into some kind of like football-wide topics too, so I hope you guys enjoy that conversation right at the top of the show. After that, we've got Faux Focus, where one of my go-to resources for all Buffalo Bills news, Sal Capaccio. He's going to join the show. Just talk through what the Bills' mindset is. Obviously, this is a team surrounded by a little bit of turmoil. Let's see what they've got cooking up in Buffalo. We'll talk through that with Sal in Faux Focus. Then we've got our extra analysis from our Eagles game plan crew. So Greg Cosell, Mike Quick, Ike Reese, John Clark, all here to get you ready for Eagles Bills. As always, before we get started, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, leave a question. We're going to answer one of your questions in the show today. Speaking of which, we will do that right here in Three and Out.
How about this for a start?
They've got him again!
What a defensive stop. Slade, second pick of the game.
Oh, I'm going to have to call him big play.
And this defense does the job. 1-2-3 and out.
All right, back again here for Three and Out. My friend Ross Tucker, we're going to talk through some of the things that are on our mind as we get ready for Eagles and Bills. And Ross, usually for this segment, I usually try and do some kind of deep dive into like some thematic topic when it comes to the Eagles, and usually try and get some stats, pair it with some film study. This one I feel like is more of like a conversation that I want to pick your brain on, because, you know, obviously a lot of discussion about what the Eagles did, all the adjustments on both sides of the football, what they did in the second half, shutting out the Chiefs. So I want to talk to you about halftime adjustments and mid-game adjustments. I guess before I ask the first question, how do you kind of view that? Because obviously when you're working in broadcasting, you're covering games every single week. I feel like that's an easy thing for sideline reporters and for color commentators to jump on and play-by-play guys and say the halftime adjustments. But it's more than just like halftime. You go into the locker room and then you come out, and all right, that's the plan, right?
You better be making – it's funny because when I was playing, I had a coach one time that said, in high school, you make the corrections after the game.
Yeah, right. Yep.
In college, you make the corrections at halftime, the adjustments at halftime. And in the NFL, you make them in between series.
Yeah.
Well, what I would say to you now is, in college, you're making them in between series. And the NFL, you better make it before the next play. Yeah. You better make it in between plays. In other words, every defense, let's talk about, if you're from my perspective as an offensive lineman, they're going to have a new wrinkle that they throw at you pretty much every week, right? Like every defense will have some thing that they'll throw at you. Maybe it's we used to call it the blitz of the week, right?
Yep.
Your first third down, Fran, third and eight, they bring 4 week or whatever it is, right? You come over, the O-line coach gets out the board. All right, here's what they're doing. Here's how we're going to pick it up. The next third down, they usually try it again to see if you fixed it, and you have. You need to do that. I mean, because otherwise it's too late. And really, any other adjustments, if you're not at a level significantly with your football intelligence that you can't see something happen once and not let it happen again. I mean, really, Fran, the best guys, they don't even let it happen to them the first time.
Right.
They already see the clues, right? Like, the Mike linebacker's a little bit wider. The DN, the five technique's a little bit tighter. Guess what? Here comes Sam Mike dog. The five technique's pinching into the B gap. Sam and Mike are coming. Like, you got to feel those things before they happen, really, the first time. But if you're not that type of guy that you can feel it the first time, you sure as heck better be able to sense it the second time. And I think if there's one thing, and I know you know this, Fran, but one thing I would tell fans that they don't realize, and I really think this is like every pro sport, NBA, baseball, but definitely the NFL. It is so much more mental, so much more of a thinking sport than people realize. And I can't tell you how many coaches have realized over the years, Fran, and we've seen it with the Eagles, right? Like TJ Edwards ran a terrible 40, and everybody was concerned about him because of that. But his instincts allowed him to be a step ahead of everybody else and to play much faster. Whereas other players, don't need to be said, but the Eagles have brought in a bunch of guys that could really run at that position that were former safeties, but they didn't have those instincts of TJ Edwards. They were not playing a step ahead. They were playing on time or maybe a step behind. You just can't do it. At those positions, I would say in particular at safety and linebacker, you really, those are football intelligence positions. And they all are. Corner for sure. Like Slay is so smart. Bradbury, so smart. And you have to be. If you're in your 30s and you're still playing corner, covering these 22-year-old receivers, you better have a really good head on your shoulders. Because whether they would admit it or not, I don't think Bradbury and Slay move quite as well as they did, you know, 8-9 years ago.
So a lot there to unpack. And we could have a whole podcast discussion just about play speed versus time speed. And I think also like you can get into like sports performance anxiety, like the, how you like need confidence and confidence building. And if you don't have confidence, how that can affect your on-field performance. But I do want to go back to just like the process in between drives. So you come to the sideline, you meet with your offensive line coach. Let me first ask you, the printouts on the sideline, were you a player that got something from that? Or were you someone that, hey, you know what, like me and the rest of the offensive line, we're going to talk through what we saw, what the coaches saw, what the coaches upstairs saw, and we're going to go off that? Or was it, hey, like we need to see the printouts. Let's take a look at what the eye in the sky saw.
So one thing I don't even know the answer to this, Fran, but I'd be curious to talk to any players that played kind of in both eras. But in the Microsoft Surface era, I think it's changed a lot. Because back then, you would get two printouts. One was right before the snap. One was right after the snap. And really, for an offensive lineman, that was kind of all you needed, right? To know where they were lined up and then where they were going. The rest of it, you remembered what happened on the play.
Right.
You know, you said to the offensive line coach or the guy next to you, yeah, you see how he's tight here? He ended up pinching all the way to the A-gap. They ran a stunt on the other side. Like, and you talk through it. What's different now is, like, they actually can watch the whole thing. Like, they can see the whole – I believe – am I right on that, Brandon?
You know what's funny is, as you were saying, I'm like, I actually think they are still not allowed to watch the video. I'm pretty sure it's still just the screen grabs, but
except it's a screen grab on the tablet.
Yeah, and that's been like a talk I've heard players talk about. Like at this point, like just give us the video. But I do get like the idea of, oh, you know what, like staying like closer to the nature of the game and not like giving you all the answers to test and being able to watch the video. But I'm interested to get your thoughts on that too.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I see it like, well, first of all, in baseball, the first thing those guys do after they're at bat is they go watch their at bat. They watch the video of it.
Yep.
Secondly, in the NFL, or I see it now in high school. Fran, there's no rules in high school for technology.
Right.
So I've done state championship games where the guys in the box next to me, they watch it, and then they have the game on a feed, like a 6-second delay. So they watch the game and then they immediately watch the play that just happened on their video. And that changes things for the next play. And they look at it again in between series. It is kind of weird that the NFL would be behind high school from a video perspective. And also what I don't like about that, not that anybody listening to us cares, but like not every high school can do that.
Right.
So
and
like
that's
the high
school with
the more
in,
money.
Yeah.
And the more technology, that's a major, major advantage to be able to watch the play that quickly and know exactly who screwed up. So you can say to your guys, hey, Johnson, you know, took the wrong footwork or whatever. And you can make those corrections. Because now I watch high school, all those guys, the O-line coaches for high school, they're looking at their iPad during the timeout to see what happened. Mm.
Yeah, I know, like, you know, when those rules were initially put in from a technology standpoint, both NFL and college, it was to protect the have-nots, right? Like, oh, not every team is working with the same budget. That has obviously changed, as all teams now can afford if they wanted to do video. But I mean, when I first got to the Eagles, like, coaching tape was still in SD. Like, I just did that Kelsey project that went out. If you look at the rookie film that went up on that YouTube segment in 2011, it's 4x3, like, standard definition video. That's what NFL teams had to trade. Now, all their stuff internally was all HD, but when you had to trade video, everything was standard definition. And it was because, oh, well, not all teams are up on HD yet. Of course they were, but you had to, like, kind of update those rules. And so I'll be interested to see if that is something to change. But I did want to just talk about the halftime adjustments, mid-game adjustments, because that is certainly something that the Eagles have been really good at over the course of Nick Sirianni's tenure. I think when you look at the coaches on this staff, they are teachers first and foremost. And I think that, you know, when you look at their ability to make those changes on the fly, that has certainly been a strength for this football team. Let's go now to your topic.
I want to talk about the Eagles' offensive line and how athletic they are and why that's so important, in particular, the type of pullers they are. And so I think people need to realize, Fran, pulling is not easy, okay? You know, there's a play against Kansas City Monday night where they run a G scheme to the left, and Mailata's 380, and he's kicking out a corner. Kelsey pulls at age 36 years of age, and he's up on a safety, and he dumped the guy, by the way.
Yep.
That's one area he's really improved, is he's learned how to block those guys or get them down to the ground without holding, you know, without it being a holding call. He knows the tricks now. So, but what happens is, a lot of times, if you – so think about this defensively, and you know this, Fran, but every defender has a gap. Okay, so on either side of the center, there's the A gap. In between the guard and the tackle on both sides, that's the B gap. In between the tackle and the tight end, or the tackle and all the way to the sideline, is the C gap. And every defensive guy in the front seven, they are responsible for a gap. When you pull guys, Fran, you are essentially, on some level, gaining a gap. Because as the guy moves and pulls, that linebacker then, that second-level defender, has to pick one gap or the other, one side or the other, and it makes it a lot tougher for them to fit where they want to be, as opposed to a zone run or even a gap run where you kind of know where you're supposed to fit. When there's a puller, you know, they still try to get to where they think they're supposed to be, but that doesn't always happen. And the linemen do a good job of using their momentum against them. All these guys for the Eagles can pull. You know, you don't see it from Dickerson quite as much, but like Cam Jurgens is a freak athlete. Lane Johnson, freak athlete. There's no way there's a side of the line that has freakier athletes than Lane Johnson and Cam Jurgens.
Yep.
And then the left side, I don't think there's a line out there that has bigger mashers than Mailata and Dickerson. So being able to be so multiple in who you pull, right? Like, I talk to these college coaches, and there's some linemen that they can't pull them, because it's one thing to pull. Friend, if the guy isn't that, if the guy's going to be trips on himself, or even if the guy can run, but he's not good at hitting a moving target, it doesn't really help you very much. Like, if you get the guy out there in space and the DB can shake him or pop inside, hop back outside, well, then you didn't really do that much. But for the Eagles to have guys that can get out of their stance, pull, get to the second level, and then stay on their feet well enough to stay engaged with a defensive back, it's a gigantic advantage in the run game. And it was a big factor Monday night in a lot of those successful Eagles runs with DeAndre Swift.
I would say, to your point, that if you were to rank the top 10 pulling offensive linemen in the NFL among starters, like starting offensive linemen for all 32 teams, you throw them all into a bucket. So that's what that's, you know, 5 times 32, we'll do the math. You'd throw all those guys. The Eagles probably have 4 of the top 10 pulling linemen in the NFL. If you look at Mailata, Kelsey, Juergens, and Lane, I think those are those 4 guys would be in the top 10 because of what they can do on the move. And yeah, having that, especially when you then factor in having the mobile quarterback, because now it's not just, oh, they can run counter, but now they can run quarterback counter, and they can run quarterback counter read. And you have all of these different extensions with all the different combinations of who can pull and who can't, and who's going at anyone. That's what makes the offensive line and the run schemes so, so fun to be able to study. And also, really quickly, I know that the Buffalo Bills, I'm pretty sure when I looked at the numbers, they run the 4th most gap schemes in the NFL. They love pulling offensive linemen. So the Eagles defense this week, they will also see a lot of those guys on the move. Now, they are not the athletic freaks that the Eagles are. They have more, actually. I mean, honestly, they've got mashers up front in some of those guys. They are different kinds of pullers, but they do love to get, you know, Deion Dawkins on the move and Spencer Brown, the right tackle, on the move. They like to get those guys as used as pullers. So it's something the Eagles D will have to face this week as well.
A good point. They got 2 new guards. And I think they got him less for the pulling and more for the power.
Yes.
Connor McGovern, the former Penn Stater, who's from Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. Yep. He's their left guard now. And then Osiris Torrance, who I think was the highest guard drafted in this most recent draft from Florida. He's like a 340-pound hammer. They wanted to try to be able to run downhill a little bit more. And they also wanted to be able to protect the depth of the pocket a little bit. I think they felt like they were getting a little bit too much push up the middle against Josh Allen. They wanted him to be able to step up rather than having to always bail outside left or right.
Yeah, Torrance is one of those. He's a brawler. I mean, he's 330 pounds. You get him on an island in pass pro, and he has struggled a little bit. You know, when he's one on one, so that'll be a matchup to watch with Fletcher Cox, and, you know, potentially Jalen Carter at times. But in the run game, that's how they want to utilize his skill set. Topic number 3 comes from our listeners. Michael left this comment on our Apple Podcast page, so I saved it here for this segment. Here's the question, Ross. Up until the last few years, NFL teams, including the Eagles, used a goal line defense with 6 defensive linemen. In recent years, the Eagles no longer use this situational defense and instead use their base defense. Do you know why there has been this change in the last few years? Ross, I think it's kind of a simple question to answer, but I'll let you take first crack at it.
Well, so when I was playing, and I think even fairly recently, there was really only 2 goal line defenses, maybe 3.
Right.
Okay. There was a goal line 6-2 or a goal line 5-3. Okay. And so based on whether literally sometimes we didn't know what defense they were going to be in. So Fran, we would go there and 1st and goal from the 2, let's say we run the play. And then we would be saying to our coaches 6-2, like maybe they couldn't see 6-2 or 5-3. Now there's also, if you get to the 6-inch line, they would just be in every gap. You know, like a gap defense, because they know quarterback sneak's coming. But it used to be 6-2 or 5-3. And I don't know. I mean, I don't study it that closely. I'm sure there's still some teams that do that in some situations. But I think what's happened now is you actually see less and less pure goal line offense.
Offense, yep, no doubt. Yep.
I think the teams have realized, the thought process used to be, you don't want anybody coming off the edges that can make the play in the backfield. So double tights, wing, so that they can't chase it down off either edge, right? Now, I think people have realized, wait a minute. If we take the receiver out, that takes a guy out with him.
Yep.
If we take the receiver out the other side, that takes a guy out with him. So why are you wanting your guy to block someone at the point of attack and add 2 more bodies to the mass of humanity, when if you just split them out wide, it gets a better result? It's like he's blocking him without having to block him, and you create more space. So I think, good question, Michael, but I think one of the biggest reasons for that is I think we've seen less and less pure goal line offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. And I will say, too, red zone offense is basically like an all-time low, Ross, like since people have been charting red zone offense. Like this has been as tough of a year for offenses inside the 20 as it gets. And I think that defenses have some answers for some of the things that that offenses are trying to do. I know that was a big topic here in Philadelphia to start the year, but since then, I want to say since week 4, week 5, the Eagles have been like the best red zone offense in football. So it kind of bounced back the other way, but across the league, red zone offense has been down this year. And I think it's, again, just teams have an idea of how to match up with what offenses are trying to do in the red area. So just a big theme that I'm sure will be talked about a little bit in the X's and O's angles of the media sphere surrounding the NFL this offseason. Ross, thanks so much for joining us once again. Happy Thanksgiving. I know it's one of your favorite days of the year. Number one thing you're most excited about for Thanksgiving this week?
Well, that's tough because I can't remember the last time I was actually home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's valid.
So I will say I'm looking forward to Iowa, Nebraska, and calling that game because that's the game I'll be calling. But I'm sure I'll eat something pretty good out there in Nebraska on Thanksgiving.
You know what, though? Seeing Iowa, you were just talking about the mass of humanity. That Iowa offense, they've been known to play with like the mass of humanity and just put a bunch of guys up on the line of scrimmage and just trying to mash it.
And I love it. I love the way Iowa plays. You know, I mean, both these teams play that way a lot. Both these teams have really good defenses. Make sure you watch the game, Fran. Watch number 9 and number 0. Nebraska has 2 D linemen I think are like legit dudes. Bear Hutmaker and Tyron Johnson, the other kid too. Really, really good.
Yeah, we love it. Well, Ross, we will make sure to tune in on Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thank you.
What's this matchup look like from the other side? Time to find out in Faux Focus.
All right, so I teased it at the top of the show. Really happy to welcome back here for our Faux Focus segment, Sal Capaccio. You can follow him on Twitter at Sal Sports. He's the beat and sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills, WGR 550. Sal, thanks so much for joining us once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Always good to be on with you, Fran. Thanks for asking me.
All right, well, let's get into this matchup because a lot of intriguing storylines on both sides of the football. We'll start with the Bills offense, and I want you to put on your Joe Brady hat. What is the biggest strength for the Buffalo Bills going into this game? What gives you the most confidence to be able to come out with a victory?
Two words, Josh Allen. He's still the Bills' biggest strength, right? I mean, he's Josh Allen, and he's still putting up fantastic numbers. Yes, I understand that the interceptions are high. A lot of that is not on Josh this year. I think you really watch the games. Yep. There's been times where Josh has obviously turned the ball over for bad decisions or bad throws, but not nearly the amount of what the numbers show. I mean, a couple weeks ago, he throwing right off Gabe Davis's hands that turns into an interception. A couple times this year, he's just kind of thrown a long ball on a 3rd and 20 and, you know, an arm punt, we like to call it. But that said, Josh Allen is still obviously an elite quarterback in this league. And, you know, last week without having Gabe Davis even have a catch and Stephon Diggs only 4 catches, they were able to still score 32 points on the Jets. So I think confidence wise, spreading the ball around and being able to kind of with the new offensive coordinator, maybe there's some new things they can do there to get other guys involved. I think that would be one. And then looking at the Eagles, they seem to give up, you know, plays to tight ends this year. They haven't been a super effective at defending a tight end, and the Bills have a very emerging tight end, as you know, Fran, Dalton Kincaid, and a guy who's really starting to put up some numbers.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how the Bills decide to use Kincaid. And that's been a big storyline in and of itself, right? Is that they came into the year wanting to use more 12 personnel, 11 and a half personnel. I know they kind of tabbed that. But with the Dawson Knox injury, it's been Dalton Kincaid's show for the most part. Quentin Morris comes in as a blocker. But what are your thoughts on what the future of that offense will look like now that Kincaid has really kind of cemented himself as like, okay, this guy can be a focal point of this pass game?
Yeah, you know, and first of all, I'll say Sean McDermott said that even though Dawson Knox is eligible to return this week, it doesn't appear he will. Yeah. They'll probably wait till after the bye week next week to get him back. But I still think Dawson's a very good player and he has a role in this offense, but I don't think it'll be as much 12 personnel as they envision going forward. They're best when they put more wide receivers on the field. That's what they were for a couple of years under Brian Daboll with Josh Allen. They've wanted to go to this 12 personnel and 11 and a half to put teams in different matchups. But really, when you spread the field and allow Josh to pick his matchups, Josh is a very cerebral quarterback. He knows where to go with the football. He knows how to read what defenses are trying to do to him. So I think the future of it is to still have Dalton Kincaid firmly on the field a lot and still use Dawson Knox, but probably not in a lot of the 12 personnel role and maybe spell him and to still have them on the field once in a while, but to really start highlighting, you know, using more of the 11 personnel and even 10.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what that identity is. You mentioned earlier just the turnovers kind of working back against the grain with Josh Allen, and that's something I think Eagles fans can sympathize with, because that's something, you know, Jalen Hurts was not known as a turnover-prone quarterback, and he really hasn't been this year, but the interceptions have gone up, the fumbles have gone up, and regression kind of works both ways, right? What goes up must come down, and vice versa. So I think that that's a big thing that hopefully can get corrected for the Buffalo Bills, but I do want to ask you, with the change at offensive coordinator, I mentioned Joe Brady, now the play caller, Ken Dorsey there the first 10 weeks of the season. What has been the discussion up in Buffalo over the last 10 days about the changes to the offense? What have you guys seen? What has been discussed in terms of the differences now with Joe Brady at the helm?
Well, two things that happened last week. Number one, much more motion. The Bills were near the bottom of the league in motion used on offense. And suddenly Joe Brady comes in. They're using more motion. That's what he was known for a lot at LSU. Now, look, you and I could probably coach Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and do pretty well. No disrespect to Joe Brady. He had this great talent, but that was a part of their offense. They used a lot of motion then. And he brought it to the table on Sunday in just a short week. So I wonder if, and I think that they'll probably continue to do that. The other thing is, if you look at the passing charts, the Bills attacked the middle of the field a lot more last week than they had been. A lot of the stuff, and that goes back to Dalton Kincaid, but that's also slot guy Khalil Shakir. We saw the 81-yard touchdown.
Yep.
And then the other one is running backs out of the backfield. Ty Johnson steps up. Ty Johnson doesn't get a lot of touches, but, you know, with Joe Brady, it reminded me of, you know, Fran, you know, sometimes guys go, hey, if I ever get in that role, I'm going to do this. It reminded me, I bet you Joe Brady always thought, hey, if I get in that role, I'm going to use Ty Johnson, because he's on the practice squad and he's got juice, because suddenly he has this uptick. He catches the ball to the backfield. He's a big touchdown. And they used James Cook in that role as well. So I think those are some of the differences we saw at least through 1 week.
You know, Josh Allen, I know, spoke after the game saying that, you know, I have to not get bored with the underneath stuff. Do you feel like that is going to be a more of like an area of importance? Is that something to watch in this game with just those running backs in the flat?
It's always an area of importance for the Bills. Josh Allen, teams have really forced him to be patient. They forced the Bills to be patient. He doesn't want to play that way. He wants to throw the ball deep. And the explosive plays haven't been there for the Bills this year. That's been a big source of concern, but it's because of the way defenses are playing them. But look at Josh's completion percentage. Up until last week, I think he was number one or number two in the league. He's just at 70% or just below that. I mean, he's very, very efficient. He's taking check down. And he's doing a great job of it until the point where he doesn't, right, Fran? And he tries to make something happen because he's Josh Allen. The one thing that we've been clamoring for more here, and Bills fans want, believe it or not, this is why you don't listen to national media talk about the Bills. They always say they're asking Josh Allen to put the hero cape on and do all. No, we want more of what Josh Allen hasn't been running this year. We'd like to see him run more. It's been taken out of the offense. It's making defenses plan and play them much easier. If you don't have to worry about Josh Allen running, you just sit there in zone defense and say, take all the underneath stuff. But once he starts running, like he did a little bit last week, that could be something that we see more incorporated here. And you look at the Bills' losses. They have 5 losses this year. Every one of them is by 1 score. And I'm telling you, Fran, it's because they turn the ball over. Otherwise, I think they wind up winning a majority of those games. It's just a critical mistake at the wrong time.
Yeah, the Eagles used a bunch of different spy and contain measures against Patrick Mahomes a week ago. We'll see how many of them they bust out against Josh Allen, knowing his mobility. Let's go over to the other side of the football, and I'll ask you to put on your Sean McDermott hat first as the defensive coordinator. Leslie Frazier no longer there this season. So McDermott, essentially the DC. What is the biggest strength on defense at this point? What gives you confidence in your ability to stop Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, and company?
Well, I don't know if you have a lot of confidence, right? I mean, that's a lot of talent to handle. And of course, they're really special what they do, running the ball, throwing the ball. They're so well balanced. But I would say the defensive line for the Buffalo Bills, it's one of the best defensive lines in the league. Greg Rousseau is having an outstanding year. Ed Oliver is having, to me, a Pro Bowl year, if not all pro. I think he's been terrific in the middle and in the interior and on the outside of him, even besides Greg Rousseau. I would say Leonard Floyd has been one of the better free agent signings in the league. He's at 9.5 sacks this year. He's really getting after the quarterback well. He had 2.5 last week against the Jets. But I think defensively, the defensive line, even though this is a very good offensive line, obviously for the Philadelphia Eagles, they pass block well, they run block well. But that's the area of strength for the Buffalo Bills, is their defensive line and trying to get after the quarterback.
This is a unit obviously marred by injuries. They've lost guys for the season at all 3 levels, right? Tre'Davious White at corner, Matt Milano at linebacker, Daquan Jones at tackle. Who has been the biggest loss? I'm assuming it would be between Milano and White. What has been the biggest loss in your mind?
It's Matt Milano for sure. Matt Milano is, to me, I'd say the 3rd most important player in the roster behind Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. Wow. So, I mean, Matt Milano is a fantastic football player. He does so much so well. And really, without him, they've had to kind of piece it together different ways. So his main backup is Dorian Williams, who's a rookie, and he plays like his hair's on fire. love him as a football player, but I don't think the game slowed down quite enough for him yet. So they don't really love him in certain situations, but they love having him on the field and what he can bring to the energy and, you know, to get after the football. That said, Tyrell Dodson has had to play the Will linebacker spot, and he's actually played a lot better as of late, but he can be a liability in coverage. He's very good as a run linebacker, a little bit. He's not as great of a pass against the pass. So what they've done, Fran, is it's actually really, I think Sean McDermott is a very smart defensive mind. And what they've done over the last few weeks is when they get in down and distance certain situations, they'll go three safeties and they'll move Jordan Poyer down to the linebacker level. He'll actually play as a dime safety, basically as a linebacker, you know, and that's kind of how they've mitigated that. And it's really worked well for them. But the issue in this game, they're not just banged up with those guys you said. They are really hurting in the secondary. In fact, practice on Wednesday, no Taylor Rapp with a neck injury, no Dane Jackson concussion protocol, no Taron Johnson concussion protocol. So, you're talking about possibly seeing Cam Lewis cover Devontae Smith in the slot. You know, we'll see if that happens. Cam Lewis is a nice player, but you really need Taron Johnson. The guy that's really stepped up is Rasul Douglas. You know him well in Philly, obviously, from a few years ago. The Bills traded for him at the trade deadline. He had two interceptions and a fumble recovery last week. He's got a nose for the football. Now, him and Christian Benford would start, but, you know, you're still – and by the way, Micah Hyde's day-to-day, Cam Lewis is day-to-day. They're really banged up right now.
So is that the biggest concern? If you're Sean McDermott now, from a head coach standpoint, is that your biggest worry going into this game?
100%. I think it's the injuries, especially in the secondary against guys like A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and the guys they can bring to the table there. So, for sure, I think that's your biggest worry is your secondary trying to hold up. You're probably looking at a guy like maybe Jamarcus Ingram being elevated. Damar Hamlin's generally inactive. He probably would have to be active this week in that situation. Yeah. Damar's a nice special teams player and a nice depth piece, but not the kind of guy that you really want out there covering, you know, elite wide receivers and putting those situations. So we'll see where they go with it. Maybe they get some of these guys back, but right now, you know, it's concerning.
So we've talked through a couple of these matchups. Do you feel like there's one in particular that stands out to you, Sal, as the most pivotal that could determine the outcome of this game one way or the other?
Yeah, I think it's the Bills' offensive line against the Philadelphia Eagles' defensive. Yeah. You know, if the Bills' offensive line can, you know, stay on schedule and not allow the Eagles to, you know, put the Bills in really behind the chains, down in distance, on the road, hostile environment, I think the Bills have a chance here because I think then Josh Allen, now his legs might come into play. Now throwing to the backside of the backfield, you don't have to have, you know, 10-yard passes downfield and have to target, you know, Dalton Kincaid all the time or, you know, your wide receiver. So to me, it comes down to really both lines because I think the Bills defensive line against the Eagles offensive line as well, especially short yardage and, you know, the tush push and everything that, you know, they're known for. You don't have to be in, you know, the Eagles can basically play every down a distance up to maybe 8 yards. That's all they really need because then they're going to get that first down. So it's really, you know, I think those two areas, I don't mean to sound like an old football coach. It's the trenches, right? I mean, that's really, to me, what it comes down to for these games. And then I am concerned about the slot corner position for the Bills against the Eagles. But I also like the matchup for the Bills tight end against the Eagles defense. And the fact that no Dallas Goedert, obviously, for the Eagles looks like, you know, that would be a challenge for them.
My last follow-up would be just looking ahead at that Buffalo Bills offensive line. Who has been like the strongest player from that five-man group? And who has been the weakest player from that five-man group?
You know, the offensive line's played really well as a group this year.
Yeah.
Deion Dawkins might be having his best year as a pro, and now he's returning home. You know, he played at Temple, and he gets a chance. Hassan Reddick and him were teammates at Temple. They'll be going against each other a little bit. But Deion Dawkins having the best year of his career, I think, at left tackle. And I would say, you know, really, you know, you're a big draft guy. Osiris Torrence has really done a nice job his rookie year at right guard. He's stepped in, and he's been acclimated. Spencer Brown sometimes at right tackle can be the guy where you look and go, man, that wasn't a great day for him. That wasn't a great rep for him. I think he's been more consistent this year than inconsistent, but he's definitely had games where he's such a big guy. He struggles sometimes with edge speed pass rushers because he doesn't quite have the bend necessarily to stay with them or the feet. But you know, he's a really big guy. He can swallow you up, but that's probably the one area and the one guy that I would say out of the five that maybe you look at a few times and go, okay, wasn't the best day for him.
Sal, this has been awesome. Again, for anybody looking for more Bills coverage, make sure you go follow him on Twitter at Sal Sports. We'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate the time once again here on Faux Focus.
Always, man. Appreciate your work too as well.
Well, great stuff there from Sal. Always great to catch up with him. Now let's check in with our Eagles game plan crew. This is all stuff that was left on the cutting room floor from this week's episode. Great analysis from John Clark, Ike Reese, Mike Quick, and Greg Cosell. Due to time constraints, could not squeeze it into the show, but I kept it here for you. Let's give it a listen.
Yeah, G, plays like this, is what was missing early in the season for this Bills offense. The reason why they made the switch at offensive coordinator, they bring in Joe Brady is calling the plays now for the offense. This is the first game we got a chance to see him there. What are some of the differences that you're seeing in the offense from last week compared to what you saw earlier in the season? And then also, what do you think the Eagles should expect to see in this game?
Yeah, I think one thing really stood out right from the start, and that was the more extensive use of motion, Ike. And I think that's something that will now be part of their offense, because I think what happened, this was a kind of a static offense, and you saw right from the start Stephon Diggs in motion quite a bit. You want to see how the defense is going to react to this. I think the use of motion will now be a part of what they do, because one thing about motion too is it helps the quarterback research the defense before the snap of the ball, and then allows the reads and the throws to become more defined. And with Allen, you always have the ability to make those special outside of structure plays, but you are trying through route concepts, through the use of motion, to get him a little more firmly planted in the pocket and play within structure. And there were some plays last week where that was really, really effective, and he was able to play with a more refined sense of timing and rhythm.
Yeah, and being disciplined in your coverage is going to be key. You know, Josh Allen can extend plays, running around. He's a big body. He is a willing runner as a quarterback. So you're going to have to be disciplined in knowing that if you're in coverage, stay placid to your man and let the guys up front do their job as far as the rush lanes go. But here's the other thing when facing this Bills offense that we need to take advantage of. Josh Allen turns the ball over an awful lot.
Absolutely.
More than anyone over the last 3 to 4 years in the league, Josh Allen has turned the football over. So as a defense, what you want to do is be patient. You know, they talked about this all week. I mean, that secondary is probably saying, I got to get me one this week. I got to get me one this week. And that's how we used to be as a defense.
Yes.
Reminds me a lot of a quarterback that played in Green Bay years ago. You know, he would take chances with the football because he believes in that rocket of an arm that he has. Josh Allen's the same way. He's going to take some chances. You got to be there ready to take advantage of it when he's off kilter with the throw or the ball is tipped. You'll get your opportunities. Just be ready to take advantage of it.
You know, you talked earlier about the possibility of spies. And this is the type of game where you want to kind of contain him or have a guy just waiting because he likes to take off and run. He's a big guy. He's an athletic quarterback. Yeah, he'll take a lot of chances throwing the football, but he can also hurt you running the football out of the pocket.
Yeah, we saw Bradley Roby punch that ball out from Travis Kelce in Kansas City. Now, Josh Allen is a big fella. Can you practice that, trying to punch the ball out with Josh Allen when he's running?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And because he's a quarterback, I know he runs an awful lot, but his ball security is not like a running back where you tuck it and you're running it that way. He's right. Also at times waving it around. He may throw it or what have you. So the ball security isn't there. I love seeing the Peanut Tillman punch last week from Bradley Roby. We need to employ that an awful lot more. Runners do not secure the football because they're looking to gain extra yards. And Josh Allen is one of those guys. When he's not protecting the ball, yeah, we need to knock it out.
Clark, understand this. It's not happenstance. It just didn't, like, okay, it just happened. They practice every day punching the football out. It's something that they rehearse. So when they get in those situations, Peanut Tillman comes to mind, and they want to punch the football out.
Yeah, Fletcher Cox told me he thinks they've turned a corner as far as the defense becoming a defense that takes the ball away like they did in Kansas City.
Okay, G, we get it that they don't blitz a whole lot. They like the guys up front, their front four. They can get after it, particularly Ed Oliver. When you watch his play, what do you think of him, and how do you think the Eagles should handle Ed Oliver and what he presents?
Hugh, he's the guy, you're 100% right. And this year is the year he really channeled that explosive quickness, which we all knew he had coming out of the University of Houston at about 280 pounds. But he was never a great pass rusher. But this is the year he's channeled that quickness into being able to rush the quarterback at a much more effective and higher level. So he's going to be playing against, obviously, it could be Dickerson, it could be Juergens, it could be Kelce. And he's a guy whose initial step off the snap is so quick That you have to really be aware of that, because he almost moves like a running back at times when you watch him rush the quarterback. You know, he has that juke ability. That first step is so dynamic, and then he has that lateral quickness that is really, really explosive. So he's their best interior pass rusher. They've gotten some quality edge rushes off the edge, of course, by Leonard Floyd, who's done a nice job for them. I think they're waiting a bit for Von Miller to just get back on track, because he really hasn't given them what they hope. Because, as we said, they're a predominant four-man D-line pass rush team, so they need those players to be able to at least exert pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, and I mentioned the opportunities that are going to be there on the outside, yeah. A.J. and Devontae. I mean, A.J. coming off of one catch, 8 yards, I can guarantee you he's going to have a good game against the Buffalo Bills. Former Eagle over there, Rasul Douglas, just joined those guys. He's playing well, but he hasn't faced anything like A.J. Brown, and they don't have Tre'Davious White either. So you look at that secondary, the safeties are a little longer in the tooth.
Yep.
There's some opportunities in the pass game.
As always, be sure to check out Eagles Game Plan. It goes up digitally on Saturday across all Eagles channels, or if you live in the Philly area, Sunday morning, NBC 10 at 10 a.m. Great stuff, as always, from the Eagles Game Plan crew. Thanks to all of them, and thanks to you out there as well for all of your support for not just here on this podcast, but all of our X's and O's content with Eagles Entertainment. That being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.